Hello, and thank you for tuning in. You are listening to BikeRadio.me's Bringing Inspiration to Earth show. For network or show information, visit www.BikeRadio.me or call 843-808-0777. And now, the Bringing Inspiration to Earth show with your host, Robert Sharp.
Good day, everyone, and thank you for joining us for this edition of the Bringing Inspiration to Earth show. Today, my very special guest is PMH Atwater. She is author of Dying to Know You, Proof of God in the Near-Death Experience. PMH writes, "What has been missing from my work, from everyone else's work, from personal stories, and from those who interpret personal stories, from experts in religion and spirituality, from the news media, the scientists, the grief-stricken, and the born-again, is what lies at the heart of the near-death experiences. Is it nothing less than the proof that everyone on this planet in their own heart seeks to have that God exists?" PMH is author of more than 15 books, including Future Memory, Beyond the Indigo Children, We Live Forever, and I Die Three Times in 1977, The Complete Story. She has been researching the near-death phenomena since 1978, and she is considered a world authority on the subject. She is a workshop leader at major spiritual holistic gatherings and has addressed audiences at the International Association for Near-Death Studies, as well as the United Nations and in numerous countries. Her books have been translated in over 12 languages. You can find out more about PMH and her books and work by visiting her website, which is pmhatwater.com, and I do have a direct link to her website in the show page description. And when you bring up her website, right there in the very top in the front, it says subscribe now to her free monthly newsletter. So definitely bring that up and sign up and take advantage of that. So with that, I'd like to welcome PMH to the show. Good day. Thanks for joining me.
Well, it's just fun to be there.
Great. Well, I'm so looking forward to this. I've always had an interest in the near-death experience, and it's just wonderful to be able to talk to someone who's been working at it for a very long time.
Yeah, a very long time, almost four decades.
My goodness. Yeah, you were doing it when near-death wasn't cool, huh?
So, yeah, that's absolutely correct. You know, during the early days, I really got snubbed a lot. I sure did.
Yeah. Well, you know, I'd like to, first of all, I mean, I think one of the best places to start is for our listeners to get a good understanding of a couple of the concepts and the terminology. So I think the best place to start is, you know, near-death experience, because I think people have sometimes differing views of what a near-death experience is. So if you wouldn't mind.
Sure. I would love to give everybody at least a good general description. You know, everybody has their own ideas, but this is the best. And it was developed by the International Association of Near-Death Studies. And the near-death experience is an awareness, sense, or experience of otherworldliness that happens at the edge of death, whether pleasant or unpleasant, that is of such an impact that people make significant changes because of it, more often lifelong changes because of it. I'd like your audience to realize that anybody at any age can have a near-death experience. That means babies. In my book that goes in depth the most on childhood experiences, it's called The New Children and Near-Death Experiences. The frontispiece to that book was written by John Leona, and he had his experience inside of his mother's vagina as he was being born. We get a lot of cases from birth trauma. We get cases pre-birth going back to 7 months in utero. So when we're talking about the near-death experience, we're talking about an incredible dynamic that really invites us to reconsider what we think about life, what we think about ourselves, what we think about death, purpose in life. You know, it really sits us down and says, look again.
Yeah. Wow. Now, those in utero, those would be probably be called near life experiences.
You're getting cute, Robert.
Well, you know, I mean, I've never heard, you know, of that before. But, you know, since you bring up children, you know, it seems that we are having, I'm not sure if it's just an awareness or, you know, maybe there are more experiences. It seems that children are, you know, recalling, you know, previous lives and death experiences.
Oh, well, you're talking about the new
kids.
Yeah, you're talking about the new kids. Yeah, well, I wrote a book about that, too. It's called Children of the Fifth World. I am an evolutionary researcher. I research evolution and what is happening with the human family. And I go into that in depth in Children of the Fifth World. So if your people want a really good page-turner with lots of notes and suggestions, they really do indeed want that book. You know, if you hang on labels like indigo, crystal, starseed, you know, all these different kinds of labels that have been used, most of those, in fact, I think all of them are exaggerated. And do not address what's really happening with our children. They actually do more harm than good. It's wonderful that these labels, these people came forward and, you know, got us to at least thinking about, wait a minute here, whoops, the kids are different. But it's time now to toss all those labels because they sort of force kids into exclusive boxes of specialness. And that's not what these new kids are. They're inclusive. They work more with the collective. These are fantastic kids. And by the way, a lot of them remember past lives. A lot of them are psychic. A lot of them are intuitive. And, you know, I could go on and on and on for another hour or so about that. About the new kids and what this implies with their pattern, the pattern of their characteristics. It's an exciting topic.
Hmm. Yeah, well, you know, and I can understand, you know, the labeling, you know, and how it sometimes creates separation in boxes and also usually sometimes comes with a lot of preconceived notions, you know, either pro or con, you know, against the idea. But, you know, I want to go into the near-death experiences soon, but I just have to ask, I mean, idea of, you mentioned evolutionary. So in your opinion, the new kids?
We are seeing evolution in our time. Yes, this new pattern, if you want to get esoteric, the only thing that holds up in research is the references to the different root races, R-O-O-T, that suggestion then, or that idea that basic DNA, our core DNA, and that the core of the human family's DNA is cyclic. There are these huge cycles, just like there are huge cycles to the earth and how the earth changes and moves and how what happens on the earth plane. We have these huge cycles with the human family as well. And if you trace those back, then what we're seeing now is not just the beginnings of the fifth root race, but the rising of the fifth root race. and esoterically and in legend and mysticism. This is the pattern then of incredibly gifted people, whether it comes to intelligence, so we're talking IQ, where it comes to intuition and psychic ability, where it comes to being very innovative and creative, even as, you know, little 1 and 2 and 3 year olds. You know, these kids really are different. So if you take a look at the fifth root race and trace back in history, the fifth root race, this very unique patterning that we have now, these great communicators and world, you know, worldwide people, you can trace it back to the days of Jesus. There weren't that many then, but there were a few. Every renaissance the world has ever known has seen jumps in the pattern of what is occurring now, today. And then it started, this pattern of the human being began to get really noticeable in the 1800s. And from the 1840s on, just, you know, more and more and more of these kind of people. The New Thought movement, the entire New Thought movement, so you're talking about Phineas Quimby, and you're talking about Emerson and Thoreau and all these incredible New Thought people, Mary Baker Eddy and all the rest of them, those are all fifth root race people. The entire idea of Unity Church, Science of Mind Church, that's all fifth root race. All of it is. And we saw the lid come off, if you will, in the coming in of these people, that is to say, all anything that would hinder this sort of blew its gasket, if you will, in about 1982. That's when the floodgates just opened wide. And now this pattern is global. It is in every population group on the planet. This is where we're headed. This is who we are. You know, this is the new human. We're here, and it's steadily expanding.
Wow, that's amazing. Now, you know, recent science, you know, seems to point to the effect, to the fact that we can alter our DNA, or, you know, that our DNA is not necessarily as set, you know, as it was once thought.
We're going to get on the subject of DNA. This is going to get really exciting here, because DNA speaks a language. DNA, the DNA code follows syntax and language. So, yes, indeed, we can influence it. But what's really exciting, and this will bring us back into the newest book, Dying to Know You, Proof of God in the Near-Death Experience. In that book, and by the way, that's not your typical near-death book at all. It is the collective speaking as the collective about the collective experience. So it's not a research book. It's not a personal opinion book. It's not a spiritual book or a religious book or an opinion book. It is a book from the collective about the collective. So I then was able to sum the voice of the many, because I've been doing this since 1978, nearly 4,000 adults and children, and was really able to then enable their voices to come through. Not my voice, their voices. Well, in chapter 12, it's a little bitty chapter, I really stretched. I mean, I really stretched about science, because I'm not a scientist. I have my opinion like everybody else does. I see things like everybody else does, but I'm not a scientist. But I took a stretch as if I were. Okay, 2 weeks after the book, 2 weeks before the book came out, and there were some copies out, I heard over the or was advised through messages from the internet that the Russian scientists have now been able to scientifically verify, not just them, but many other scientists. I mean, this is so huge, Robert. This is just, it's just such huge news. They were able to verify that Western science blew it. We blew it. Because DNA speaks two languages. DNA also is an energetic. It is a processing, managerial, energetic field of frequency vibrations that is the same as the DNA strands that we thought was DNA. In other words, in Western science, we put all of our marbles in the linear basket, the particles, the linear. What the Russians found is that DNA is also nonlinear. It is also the wave. And they were able to prove, this is the first time in history, Robert, they were able to prove that DNA is simultaneously the particle and the wave at the same time. It is linear and nonlinear at the same time. And it proved everything I wrote in Chapter 12. This is so huge that it is changing all of science, and it's just now happening. It's just now out. We now have proof that when a psychic sees an aura, when an intuitive person sees a field, when we feel things, it is the DNA itself. It's not an aura. It's not a field. It's DNA. It all has to operate together, or there could be no creation. There could be no substance. There could be no matter. There could be no manifestation. I mean, that's how exciting it is.
It is. I find it completely. I mean, to me, I'm fascinated with that because I was of the belief that linear aspect. You know, that DNA is what it is what it is. You know, there is no changing it, no modifying it. It just doesn't change. But with that knowledge, and obviously, it is very exciting. I guess what I'm wondering is if this fifth root of human, I'm wondering if their DNA is a result of the collective, like from 1982, the opening up to, all of the realms of possibility.
These are the scientists.
Okay.
These are the scientists that are going to take us places we have never been before.
Okay. Wow. This is, to me, it's exciting. You know, the idea of, gives us hope.
You know, it goes right perfect with the book, Dying to Know You, Proof of God in the Near-Death Experience. You know, all of a sudden, we are facing what maybe we just skipped over before. You know, what's coming out of Russia is saying that by learning DNA's second language, we can engender or help to create a new heart. In other words, the DNA can form a new heart. It can form a new liver. It can form new kidneys. It can do this. And that's where they're putting all of their money, if you will, is in learning that language and helping to speak that language. And you can do that even with words. In assisting this incredible dynamic to recreate itself. So, You know, and when we're talking about life and death, you know, we're talking about the near-death experience. We're faced front and center with a phenomenon that is challenging any linear concept we have of life or of death. And it's saying that there's more to life than we ever dreamed there was. There's more to us than we could ever possibly fathom.
Yeah, I agree. Well, now, you say that the book that kind of comes from a view of the collective, you know. So,
right, yeah, you know, I've been writing down, you know, these words for over four decades. You know, in my work, I strive always for the experiencer's point of view, the experiencer's words, not my words, their words. Remember, I do not use scientific protocol. I do not use it on purpose because it uses words in advance of the individual, and I feel it's biased. Yes, you can deal with that to a certain extent, but not completely. I'm a cop's kid. I was raised in a police station. And my dad always said, the body says more than the mouth does. So I'm studying people. I'm studying everything. I'm studying your shoulders, your hips, your head, your eyes, the pupils of your eyes, your gestures. What are you doing along with the words that you are telling me? And
yeah.
I keep, yeah. And with children and adults, you know, it's not just adults.
Yeah, well, you know, the scientific method is, I mean, it's good to a degree, but when you start dealing with things beyond the physical realm, you know, are things then that can be seen, the scientific method just doesn't make it. I mean,
well,
it's a limiting method.
Yeah, it's good, Robert. It's done a lot of good. But where it gets caught is this. The near-death experience is not a pathology. You know, the scientific method works really well with pathologies. But it falls appreciably when you're working with consciousness, when you're working with other fields of energy, when you're working with other dimensions, when you're working with spirit. You know, science has a lot of problems with that. And this new, you know, the new stuff out of Russia is just hitting science right in the face. The new findings about entanglements, you know, you can have two different particles and they suddenly meet. And once they've met, once they've been together, then doesn't matter how far out they go, if they ever meet again, they will always be in sync. They will always be connected. They will always be together. And so science is now being challenged on several fronts. That it must change how it does things or it cannot be valid in the new quantum world.
Yeah, I agree. You know, and I mean, the whole, you know, DNA being particle and wave, I mean, just the whole duet, you know, intention sometimes plays a big part on what wave becomes a particle, you know, and so to me that's really fascinating. Now we're gonna, gosh, we're almost halfway through the show already. We already got 25 minutes into it.
It's a fun show.
It is great. This is great. But I want to take one more topic before we take a break. And then I do want to invite anyone, if you're listening and you would like to call in and ask PMH any questions, you can call in at 619-789-4359. Also, for those of you listening in the chat room, if you would like for me to pose a question to PMH, feel free to type it in there. Okay, now, I guess that since we talked about the near-death aspect of dying to know you, proof of God, I think the next thing is God, you know?
Oh, yeah.
I mean,
and, you know, 90 to 95% of the near-death experiences, not just in my research, but in most everybody else, it's that high or close to that high. Come back knowing God. Notice I did not say believing. Belief implies doubt.
Mm-hmm.
They come back knowing God. And the God they meet on the other side of death is not necessarily the God of Holy Writ. It is a God so much bigger than that, so much greater and more powerful than that, that how do you find words? You know, the people just sort of fall all over themselves trying to find words. You know, some, like in Unity Church, they say Father, Mother, God. Well, that doesn't work either. Some people come back core, source, presence, the all, universal essence, supreme being, divine principle, or the one. You know, whatever they want to call God, it's still God. And this idea of how powerful that might be. When they talk about the light on the other side, there's really three different lights, but this main light, this really raw, incredibly powerful light, adults describe it as more powerful than 10,000 suns. And you get this sense, definitely, with children and adults, that what we're talking about here is we're talking about electricity. We're talking about a kind of energy that is above and beyond any idea of just making you comfortable and helping you to feel better. We're talking voltage. Specifically, we're talking voltage. You know, Thomas Edison, for instance, was convinced that the soul is made up of life units, microscopic particles, and he felt, be able to isolate these or identify them according to voltage. He died before he could finish the machine he was working on. But, you know, back in the 1900s, there was this Dr. Duncan McDougall, an MD, who in his hospital arranged with dying patients, you know, always had their permission, that when they were about to die, or, you know, he had them on these giant scales, and he wanted to measure, was there any difference in weight when they were alive versus after they had passed and when they were now dead? No vital signs. Was there any difference in weight? And he found consistently that there was a small difference, about a half an ounce, three-quarters of an ounce, maybe an ounce. So 6 years later, a team of docs at a Massachusetts hospital verified his work, and they did the same thing with a much larger base, in other words, many more people. And they found that consistently about an ounce would be missing before and after. Well, you know, an ounce doesn't sound like very much. But when you think in terms of what a microchip can hold, how much information a microchip
mm-hmm.
can hold, can you imagine what a whole ounce could hold? So, you know, we're talking about, yes, energy, yes, voltage, yes, the other side, life itself is very active. It you know, life is just, it's fully charged. And we get this sense, again, from the idea of God, that, you know, even atheists who come back atheists are still different. There's a glow about them. They're calmer. They're happier. They're definitely more understanding. Many of them go to the atheist church. You know, did you know there was an atheist church? There is.
I had no idea.
There is.
Seems like an oxymoron there.
Yeah, it does.
Yeah.
But, you know, there is. But the idea of maleness, once in a while, you'll hear near-death experiencers talk about he, him, father. Never have I ever heard any of them talk about she, her, mother. Never heard that with adults or children. But sometimes you hear the he, him, or father. Most of them do not attach any kind of gender to this presence or this sense of God. But what I love are kids. They don't always do this, but once in a while you'll get a kid. I love this. Who are on the other side, who died, they're on the other side. And they're met by this incredibly loving grandfatherly figure, this God being, and the kid will go up to the God being and say, "Is this what you really look like?" And instantly, that figure will burst into a ball of light, this incredible light that is so bright. This light is so bright that you are instantly fried, but there's no pain. I mean, it's that big and that great. And sometimes kids will, you know, if they're met by an angel, they'll go up to the angel and say, "Is this what you really look like?" And again, the same thing happens. That figure will burst into light. Never as big and as powerful as that single light, but still an incredibly, powerful light of their own.
That is amazing. Well, I want to take that quick little break here, and when we come back, we'll continue. And since we're kind of right in that line of thinking, I want to talk a little bit about the afterlife, you know, and if there is, or the other side, and
sure,
get some more details about that. Okay? Great. Okay, everyone, stay tuned. We'll be right back. And again, if you'd like to ask PMH any questions, feel free to call in, and we'll be right back in about 2 minutes.
Hi, it's Maya at Mind Over Matter in Nyack, New York. I'd just like to take a moment to share with you how amazing I found Robert Sharpe's book, Joy Potential. It kind of found me at a time when I was feeling out of sorts and overwhelmed and I guess derailed by the pressures of my career and my large family and caregiving and ailing husband. I just really felt like my spark was dimming. It was a perfect time for me to pick up Joy Potential because as I just in the first few pages began to read, I found that my frame of mind wasn't so different from others dealing with challenges and the trials and tribulations of life. I guess my first feeling was that I wasn't alone, and with that I began to open more to receive the message that Robert gave of light and love and positive thinking. That's what Joy Potential is all about. His thoughts are beautifully written, and everyone, whether you're going through your own personal challenges, should read it. His message was certainly well received from me, and I'm thankful for his insight and his caring and really helping me to get back on track. I think everyone should put Joy Potential on the top of their reading list. Love and light. Thank you.
Join Maya and discover that you are not alone and that a world of joy awaits you. To get your copy of Joy Potential, visit www.joybook.me. Buy it, read it, and start living a life that's happier, more peaceful, and one where you maximize the joy potential that life has to offer. Again, visit www.joybook.me. That's joybook.me now.
Okay, everyone, thank you for staying with us. And again, I do want to thank Maya for that testimonial and also Joy Potential, my new book, It's No Secret, Spirituality Bites, and also my inspirational calendar, all available at my website, www.biteradio.me. Okay, returning back to today's show, my very special guest again is PMH Atwater, and we are talking about her brand new book, Dying to Know You, Proof of God in the Near-Death Experience. You can find out more about PMH by visiting her website, which is pmhatwater.com. And I do have a direct link to her website in the show page description. And also, once you bring up that page again, right on the very top, it says subscribe now to her free monthly newsletter. So definitely take advantage of that and sign up for that. And I did also notice that this weekend, PMH is going to be at the Universal Life Expo in Columbus, Ohio, on October 25th and 26th. So if you have any friends in the Columbus, Ohio area, or if you're there, definitely go to the expo and take in her workshop. Which is going to be the Near-Death Experience Workshop, Near-Death Experiences, the Rest of the Story. So with that, we're back, PMH.
Hi there. Yeah.
Oh, great. Well, this has been really fun and enjoyable so far. I feel like I've learned a lot. I'd like to – now, you before the break, you mentioned, you know, how kids sometimes when they went – to the other side, you know, that they would be met with that grandfatherly figure or the angelic figure, and then, you know, boom, you know, this is what you really look like. Is, in your experiences with people who have had near-death experiences, is it common that people will meet up with essences of, you know, of either family or angelic beings, in other, rather than what the people or the beings over there, the essences that take on shape that will kind of make it easier for the person who's having the experience to be able to relate to them?
Well, yes, absolutely. And let's just quickly go over the four main elements that you find in most near-death experiences. Number one,
okay,
the most common element is out-of-body experiences. And these out-of-body experiences are very vivid. They're very detailed. Most of them have third-party testimonials afterward. In other words, they were able to verify what they said or saw or heard. The second most common is that light that we've already discussed, that incredible light. The third is a greeter of some kind, and this is what you're alluding to right now. People are most often met by loved ones who've died and gone on before. And that includes pets. That includes animals. There's a lot of animals in these experiences. So you're just as apt to be met by Fido as you are Great Aunt Tilly. Also, light beings of various kinds, angels of various kinds, different kinds of greeters, sometimes a religious figure. And then the life review. And these are the most common. Yes, you can get all kinds of variations on the theme, different elements, different components to the experience. But those four are the most common. So,
okay.
But notice, Robert, that I didn't say tunnel. Did you notice that? I didn't say tunnel. Tunnel,
yeah, where is that
I
tunnel?
Believe, is a media myth. You,
okay. Huh.
Not that many people anywhere in the world experience tunnels. They never did. Yes, some people do, but it is not that common. I do not consider it a signature feature of the near-death experience. It's a media myth. You can trace back to the media and the public and becoming very popular with the public. You can trace that back to when the media was sensationalizing Raymond Moody's first book, Life After Life. Gallup polls did the first scientific survey on near-death experiences in 1982. Only 9% of the public reported anything like a tunnel. There's never been that many. A few, yes, but not that many. So the four I gave you are the most common, and then, of course, we have variations after that.
Okay. Wow. Now, and as far as the pets, you know, to me, you know, that doesn't surprise me. It seems like one of the primary roles, really, of a pet, you know, for people who have pets, is the idea of the unconditional love. You know, to me, it's you know, a person and their pet, you know, they share that,
yeah,
you know, lack
right.
of judgment, that loving thing. So it's kind of
and
like, to me,
yeah.
it's like a preset button. It's like, you know, if I see Fido, who I love dearly, you know, I'm going to open up my heart immediately. You know,
right,
I mean,
and you do see Fido. Yeah, and children see a lot of birds. There's a lot of birds in children's experiences. Sometimes with adults, but mostly with children.
Interesting. The idea of an afterlife.
Let's talk about heaven and hell. Ah!
Yeah, am I going to be happy in heaven or burned in hell? So,
well, you know, I compare the other side to like a layer cake. That is to say, there's lots and lots and lots of levels, and they're all separated by degrees or frequencies of vibration. That's what separates them. And you go wherever it is you resonate to. So when I say wherever it is you resonate to, I'm talking about your deepest self. I'm talking about the real you, not necessarily the you talk about or admit to being, but who you are deep inside, who you have built yourself to be, that inner self, that's your resonance factor with frequencies of vibration. That will be that attractor that will take you to wherever you need to be. And,
okay.
You know, certainly we have levels that are very dense and slow moving. We tend to call those hell. We have levels that are very fast. The energy there is very uplifting and very fine, and we tend to call that heaven. In my research, I would estimate that there are maybe 12 heavens and 12 hells. I mean, there's lots of different levels. And again, you go to wherever it is you resonate. But what I noticed with all these years, nearly four decades, there's no top and there's no bottom. In other words, you're not gonna rust forever in the bottom fiery pits of hell, and you're not gonna be forever on some fluffy cloud playing a harp. Not gonna happen. There's no top. There's no bottom. And how this seems to move, how it seems to process, is by choice. In other words, once you're over there, you can still learn and grow, or you can still deny and back up. So the idea of choice it's very, very valid. And it seems to be the major mover of your life in the afterlife, if you will, where you go, what happens to you. It still depends a lot on your response to that and how willing you are to move up, or if you prefer to move down. And you know, the process, if you look at it, is so exquisitely fair. You know, I look at this idea of resonation, and you go where you resonate, and you stay there as long as you're comfortable there, and that's where you want to be, or, you know, if you want to reach, you can change. But I look at that as so fair. It's sort of like nobody's judging you. There's no God judging you. You go to wherever you fit. Now, if you want judgment scenarios, if you want judgment cases, you get that every once in a while with children. I've run across a few as adults, or with adults, but I've run across more of them with children. And children can be met by what I call the critical or caring parent type. And this being can either take over the scene, as it were, or can lead them to some kind of court or hearing where they are taught or told what they're here in life for, what's expected of them, what they are to do, sort of like you and me in our own imagery thinking of Great Aunt Tilly, and she puts out her pointer finger and says, you're going to do this and you're going to do that, and this is why you're here, and you better straighten up. So it's not that it's not that bad, but it's similar to that kind of motif or that kind of energy. It's like kind of shaking up the child a little bit and say, you know, don't fluff off here, you know. Get with the program.
You got to tell me, really. We sent you there for a reason. I want to get back to the fairness in a minute, but I do have a question from someone who's listening in their chat room, Sharon, and she was wondering, in your opinion, you know, that the fifth world children, or the, you know, the fifth root children.
Fifth root race. Uh-huh.
Fifth root race. Will they have it seems from what you said they'll have a clearer sense of awareness of the collective and maybe of God. So she was wondering if she was wondering if their near death experiences will bring even more knowledge to us, or do they kind of have a sense of perfection as it already is?
Well, let me share with you why I ever started researching the new children. It was because of the near-death children. And I was finding certain traits in common, certain characteristics in common with these children, both positive and negative, of how they were able to handle this experience, what this experience seemed to mean to them, and how they came back, the after effects, their characteristics afterward. And what I began to notice is that normal children, everyday children, children born anywhere under any circumstances, were mimicking or very similar to near-death children. That is to say, they had the same traits and the same characteristics. Well, Robert, this is not possible. This is not possible. And so I stopped, well, I didn't stop, but I started then another research project along with what I was doing to really take a good look at everyday kids, all kinds of kids, what I could find out. what I found out mimic or are very similar to near-death kits. And I, you know, I wrote a lot about this. I mean, your friend out there, Sharon, you need to get the book Children of the Fifth World. You also need to get the book The New Children and Near-Death Experiences, both of them. They both come from the same publisher, Baron Company. And what I'm seeing here, this new pattern, I wouldn't put one above the other. I'm putting them equal. This new pattern of near-death kids and the new kids, and yes, they're bringing in all kinds of information. Yes, they're extremely gifted. One-third worldwide in those countries that administer standard IQ tests, one-third of these children since 1982 are scoring between 160 to 170.
Wow.
Now, you know, in most schools they say, well, genius is 132. Other teachers will say, no, 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 genius is 140. These kids are coming in 150 to 160. Some of them are up to 170. Those that had a dark light experience instead of a bright light experience were coming in over 200 in IQ tests. Again, got to read those two books, dear, with the references. Yes, we're getting incredible gifted children coming in, but they need mentors. They're getting lost with electronic devices. They're getting lost with sex and drugs and all this other stuff that's going on. And we've got to help these kids and be mentors to these kids. And I really give specific things to look for, especially in Children of the Fifth World, but both books.
Well, great. Okay, good. That's wonderful advice, and I'm sure she'll be doing that, reading those. Gosh, we're almost down to like the last 5 or 6 minutes here. So,
how did that happen?
I know.
Well,
I'm finally having fun.
They say you proof of God in the near death experience, because this book really is different. It's friendly. It's to the point. It just gets right to the issues. You know, it gets right to mission, God, soul, life, death, heaven, hell, the big picture according to children, the big picture according to adults, revelation. I mean, you know, it's all in that little bitty book. You know, I'm a researcher here, and I'm looking at this little bitty book, and I'm saying, what? I wrote something that little? But I did. It just poured right out of me. But, you know, I'm a near-death experiencer, too. I had three such experiences in 3 months in 1977. I look back at it, Robert, and I call it the heavenly sledgehammer effect. And it's because of that I became a near-death researcher.
Wow.
It's because of what I was told in my third near-death experience.
Yeah, I would think, I mean, once is something, twice, you know, but three times that has to be
a sledgehammer
effect. Wow. Gee.
Yeah, you can just see that heavenly sledgehammer.
You're back again? What are you doing here? Don't you know you've got 15 more books to write?
Boy, isn't that the truth? Ugh.
And please,
I never, ever chose to write a single book. Never. The books always would come to me in sparkles in the air, and those sparkles would fall on my desk and spell out things, and I would take it into prayer. You always want to take revelation into prayer to find out, are you kidding yourself? Do you see it right? You know, you always got to go into prayer to find out validity. And if in prayer I got the high sign that this was valid, I could do this, then and then only would I go back and start doing the outlining and putting together and designing and weaving a book, but only because I was first told or shown that this was my next job.
Wow.
So, you know,
well,
that's where
that's
I live.
That's wonderful to know.
That's where I live.
That's great. That's a beautiful place to live, a beautiful place to live. Well, now, so everybody should definitely get your new book, Dying to know You, Proof of God. Now, in that particular one, what do you hope people will leave with once they finish? What do you hope, how do you hope that it will affect people's thoughts or beliefs or patterns?
I hope that they realize that there is an intelligence above and beyond anything we can define or name that moves and breathes and loves us and inspires us and touches us, because that is true.
Oh boy, I think that's a wonderful thing for people to leave with. You know, because if you touch the people that way, it can only improve the fulfillment of life, and that's
right.
That's what we're all looking for. So, well, PMH, thank you very much for your time today.
Well,
thoroughly
thank you.
Enjoyed our conversation. You're very welcome. And I wish I were going to be in the Columbus, Ohio area this weekend, and I would definitely be right there
in
that audience.
You know, near death on Saturday, but Children of the Fifth World on Sunday, and then Saturday night I'm doing a special duo program where the drawings of near-death experiencers and sharings from the book are playing side by side, two different programs, simultaneous, side by side, and I'm in costume.
Oh my gosh!
Yep,
now
you gotta come Saturday night, Columbus, Ohio.
You gotta go. Okay. Well, thank you very much, PMH. I really appreciate it, and I've also started following you on Facebook and Twitter, so I look forward to following your journey.
Okay, thank you. Big hugs to everybody.
You're very
bye-bye.
Welcome. Great, thanks. Bye-bye. Again, everyone, today my very special guest has been PMH Atwater. We've been talking about her book, Dying to Know You, Proof of God and the Near-Death Experience. And again, you can find out more about PMH by visiting her website, which is pmhatwater.com. And I do have a direct link to her website in the show page description. And again, on her website, you can subscribe to her free monthly newsletter. Please go ahead and do that so you can follow this wonderful woman in her work. So everyone, I want to thank you for joining us for this edition of the Bringing Inspiration to Earth show. And until we meet again,
thank you for tuning in. You've been listening to ByteRadio.me's Bringing Inspiration to Earth show. To become a show follower, visit www.blogtalkradio.com/ByteRadioMe and click on the follow link. You can also find us on Facebook and Twitter at ByteRadioMe, and our shows are also available as a free podcast from iTunes. Be sure to visit our website at www.biteradio.me, that's BiteRadio.me. And until we meet again, remember to be a bright light by bringing inspiration to your world and to the lives of those you touch.